The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they're easy, but because they are hard.
Start. Five, three, two, one.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting for seven continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Friday morning California time Space Show program, the last Friday of 2017. Welcome, everybody. A great show. This is our annual year in review with Tom Olson, who is probably, out of our 16-plus years of doing the Space Show, done 14 of these programs. I think we started it in year two of the Space Show, and Tom has generously devoted himself to this report ever since. Couple of announcements first, and then we'll spend our time talking to Tom. If you want to call and talk with Tom and agree with him, disagree with him, whatever, it is toll-free 1-866-687-7223. Remember, no call screeners. Let the phone ring, and Tom and I will get you up on air as quickly as possible. And in addition, you can use email, drspace@thespaceshow.com, or you can use our blog on our website to comment. If you want to do that, then go all the way to the far right to upcoming shows. This is the first show listed. Open it up. That is our archive page for this show. And if you scroll down, you'll see a place for posting comments and questions. As soon as you do that, I'll get a copy of it and can integrate your thoughts into our discussion with Tom. That said, the phone is our preferred way of communicating, 1-866-687-7223. While you're at our website, thespaceshow.com, check out the website newsletter, Center Right. So it is uploaded every Sunday afternoon, fresh, and it has all of the programs remaining for 2017, which there's only one more on Sunday, the Space New Year's Resolution Show. More about that in a quick second. And then I'm showing you what we have booked, and we're now actively booking first quarter of 2018. January is all booked, given the time I'm taking off to move. As I've been saying, I have to leave where I am and go to new stomping grounds. Everything we do is archived, and you can listen right off of our website or quickly download these programs. For those of you who missed out on goodies and stocking stuffers for your favorite space cadet person or space show listener, remember we do have a cafe press store with space show logo wear. You can find that in the upper left menu under support, and you might still find some items for that missed opportunity of gift-giving during the holidays with T-shirts, coffee mugs, license plates without having to go to jail to make them, dog clothes, all sorts of cool things. So check that out. And then there's also Listen Live in that upper menu on the left. So this tells you how to listen to a Space Show program by listening to it live off of our website archives. Podcasting, by the way, something that all of you don't really know, Tom Olson is the absolute father of Space Show podcasting. And if it were not for Tom smashing me over the head for months with a rolling pin to get me to understand podcasting and to do this many, 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 many years ago when podcasting was not even a popular word, we would have gotten to the game much, much later than we did, and we probably got to the game even late. So Tom always has our eternal thanks for that, given podcasting is our biggest probably market that we have right now. And we also have Alexa, for those of you into all the newest and latest wonders, and TuneIn is embedded in our website, so you can listen to Space Show programs on TuneIn as you're vacuuming the kitchen or whatever you may be doing. So do check that out. And then we're still in the final 2 days, guys and gals, of our annual fundraising campaign. So if you have not supported the Space Show this year, or if you want to dig a little deeper and support it again, and you care about the tax deduction, you've got two more days to do that. We are a 501c3 nonprofit, so if you do pay federal taxes, you get a tax deduction for your gift. The same is true if you're paying California taxes. I don't think the state deduction is valid in any other states. I don't think that's reciprocal with states. But we are a California Public Benefit Corporation, so I'd urge you to check on that with your people that give you tax advice. But your gifts help shape the program for the coming year, 2018. And we are a listener-supported program, so your support is really crucial to us, and we absolutely need it, and we're deeply appreciative of those of you who have supported us and those of you who will be supporting us today and tomorrow and throughout 2018. So you can check out our nonprofit at 1onegiantleapfoundation.org, or you can email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com. And again, if you're interested in the tax deduction, you have until today and midnight, I guess, on Sunday to be able to do that and have it count for 2017. And we appreciate your support, and we absolutely need it. And again, I'm deeply indebted to all of you who do support us, and thank you very, very much for that support. Now, we also have sponsorships over and above the individual support. So sponsors get their banner ad running across the website. You can change it pretty much whenever you want. And we also read a short 60-second or less promo message that the sponsor wants me to read, and I read that on the first and second segments of every regular-length Space Show program. On shorter Space Show programs, I simply acknowledge and thank our sponsors for their support. So for today, the first segment is again brought to us by thespaceplan.com, and this is the 100-year forecast of our future in space, including Earth to orbit, reusable in-space transportation, and it depicts the development of the Moon and Mars, followed by the asteroid belt. You can check it out online at thespaceplan.com, and there the elements in the plan expand into more information, or you can buy the full-size color poster. You can also get a simpler version of the space plan. It's the student version, and either one are great for inspiration for yourself and for your students and people that you know. So all of this, again, available at thespaceplan.com. And then the Space Foundation sponsors us. And remember, they have their 34th symposium coming up April 16th through the 19th in Colorado Springs, Colorado at the Broadmoor Hotel. It is 2018's must-attend space industry conference where global space pros, leaders, and decision-makers converge. So their website, spacesymposium.org. And I'll read the messages from our other sponsors as we enter the second segment of today's program. So as I said, Tom Olson is with us. So those of you who listen regularly to The Space Show and who have been glued to every one of his annual programs, and I know that includes many of you, you don't really need an introduction for Tom. But he has been a business systems engineer and analyst in communications, aerospace, and publishing sectors. He has worked in analysis and operations roles in the financial sector, cash and fund management. He's an entrepreneur. He co-founded Exodus Consulting Group as a catalyst, helping tech startups and investors. He can tell you about his latest activity. I don't want to spend time reading about him. He's too valuable to have sitting by waiting for me to read all about him when he can talk. And it's much more exciting to hear what Tom has to say. So, Tom, welcome back. Happy New Year to you. And it's great to have you back on The Space Show for the annual year in review. What say you?
David, it's so great to be back here again. I can't believe we've done this thing 14 times.
Yeah, 14
now.
Or 50. I don't know if you did it the first year on the show or the
I did not.
Year.
So, I did not.
Well, but, so then you've done it 16 times because we're coming up on our 17th year.
My God. Well, I have to congratulate you for 17 amazing years doing this thing. You got quite a listener base, and they're always very, very intelligent and perceptive. So you attract a really, really good audience to your show, and just glad to be here.
Well, we all thank you for that. So 2017, people have been saying it's an absolute banner year for commercial space.
Oh my God. I mean, I got so much material. We couldn't do it in probably 3 or 4 hours, especially if, you know, if people start calling in or writing in. So what do? I guess we'll just, there's so much of it going on. We're just going to start with launch. And then we'll go to, we have a ton of other things. But, and you don't start with launch, except by starting with Elon Musk. He did 14 launches this year. And 5 of those were with pre-flown boosters. He's really, really pushing the reusability angle and succeeding very, very well. There were 5 pre-flown boosters and a couple of Dragon capsules that were also pre-flown. There's a little more on that in a second. He did a great talk at the International Astronautical Congress this last September. I was there. It was in Adelaide, Australia. And it was a little more muted than the previous year in Guadalajara. He's still talking a lot about what he calls his big effing rocket. That's actually the name of it right now. so it can't say it doesn't have a big sense of humor.
Well, it's the big Falcon rocket, right?
Well, no, this is something completely different. This is not the Falcon Heavy.
No, I'm kidding. I'm joking around with the acronym.
Yeah. It's not the Falcon Heavy, although that was rolled out just about a week or so ago. And so I'll get to that in a second. He talked a lot about the BFR, as we'll call it, and what it's going to be capable of. He muted some of his plans a little bit as far as Mars goes, but he still was really pushing for this as the Mars vehicle. But he also acted as though he wanted to start trying to bootstrap that technology earlier on than was discussed previously. He started talking about using elements of that program for commercial suborbital flights, say between New York and Tokyo or something like that, and he went into detail on that and showed a little video of what that might look like. He did not mention a number, however, what a ticket price might be for a flight like that. And, of course, you and I have spoken in the past for many years about the troubles that would be set point-to-point suborbital. You and a couple other doctor friends wrote a paper on it long ago. I have yet to see any data or anything else in that paper to be refuted, even after all this time. That paper was published in 2005. So I was a little skeptical when I hear things like that.
Well, there's a guy in a green shirt who wants to throw tomatoes at us or something like that, but you never did dig out that video of that talk at the Space Access Conference. I'd still love to identify that gentleman.
Yeah, I've got a... You sure that wasn't Jerry Pornell?
No, it wasn't Jerry. I know Jerry, but
yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, we don't usually do a show on who's passed away during the year for great space people. But you mentioned Jerry, and he did leave us this year. And,
yes, he did. And, we lost a few good guys.
And he was a good guy.
He was one of the best.
We are
more bereft with his loss, definitely.
Absolutely.
So back to Elon just briefly, or not so briefly. The interesting part of his talk, he was really showing off. He had this film running in the background of 18 consecutive booster recovery landings that just played in the background while he spoke. It was pretty impressive to watch on the screen. 18 in a row, boom, 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 boom. You saw them all. This is where the future is, and everybody knows it. They also, in addition to 14 launches with 5 pre-flown boosters, they also worked with Orbital ATK to do some ISS resupply runs, including a couple of Dragon capsules. And they also, as one of their 14 missions, they actually launched that top-secret Air Force X-37B. That was flown on a Falcon. That was just on the 7th of September. And the interesting thing, too, the latest Falcon launch just a few days ago, it left a very eerie-looking launch trail in the sky. It was launched from California. And a lot of people noticed it and posted videos of it, and that looked pretty wild. It looked pretty interesting. I'm not sure of the physical phenomena that's built into that. I'd have to look that up, but it was a really great display. Other interesting thing, after this IAC talk, again, he didn't take quite as long, and he was a little bit muted in some of the things he talked about, although he talked about a lot of things. But then at the end of it, he just said, thank you, and walked off the stage.
Yeah, no Q&A at all, right?
No Q&A at all. I guess after Guadalajara, he kind of learned that, yeah, this could be turning into a cult thing, and I don't want to, you know, push that. So out I go.
That's right, and by the way, that out I go was a pretty fast walk.
It was.
That wasn't a lazy stroll on a Sunday afternoon to get off the stage.
Right, that was funny. They had a big year. SpaceX did, is the important thing. I mean, 14 launches this year is just absolutely astounding. That's less than one a month.
And more planned for next year.
And a lot more planned for next year. Yeah, they've got a lot going on. They're going to be doing improvements on Dragon 2 as well. They want to fly next year. Everybody's hoping. Everybody in the capsule game right now is hoping to fly a commercial crew next year. So they're really pushing hard on that. So we'll see what happens. Especially while we're on the subject of launch, the elephant in the room, the Space Launch System, has been hit with a series of production delays. Why are we surprised? And now they've pushed back their launch date to maybe as late as early 2020. And the first launch won't even be crewed. That'll be the second launch.
Not bad for government work, Tom. Come on.
Yeah, but they spend so much money on it. And there's all this other stuff. I mean, all the stuff that we've been talking about, you and I, and the groups that we've been involved, the advocacy groups we've been involved with over the years, we've all been screaming for 15 years or more, buy the ride, just buy the ride. And there's never been a more exciting and inexpensive time right now to buy the ride.
So let me give you an analogy here.
Sure.
Because I follow Musk, not just with SpaceX, but in general. And so one of his projects that I really like is Hyperloop. So Hyperloop got going and talked about and planned roughly the same time our beloved Governor Jerry Brown started in with his high-speed bullet train, which we all in California affectionately say is a train to nowhere.
Right.
And that's because it goes no place where there's market demand, and it ends no place where there's market demand. So
basically a Acela West, you know? Yeah.
Right. So Musk is now testing Hyperloop. It won't be in California, where it is sorely needed because of politics and some economics, but it is going to be in other areas. And for a fraction of what the bullet train to nowhere has spent to accomplish nothing other than to support the labor unions involved in doing nothing, he's got Hyperloop's testing in multiple locations and plans to launch it in the Middle East and in Switzerland and on the East Coast where you are, sort of in the Pennsylvania area. I forget exactly where it goes. So you talk about what the private sector can do with people that know what the hell they're doing vis-a-vis money and new innovative technology versus what government does. You don't need to look any further than Hyperloop and the California high-speed bullet train model.
That but then on the other hand, David, you got to look at the whole thing and say, this is the same guy who also wants to launch his electric sports car to Mars.
Well, you know what? It's his damn rocket, and he can't put a real payload on the first test of the Falcon Heavy. And I see a lot of humor in having, assuming it works, okay, and it goes into orbit kind of around Mars. I mean, it'll be there for an indefinite eons of time. How cool is that to have your Tesla orbiting Mars?
I mean, well, I think the funny part is going to be, I kept visualizing this, one of these days, you know, the first Mars astronauts will actually show up, and one of them will find that thing in orbit and get into it, and it'll still fire up.
I mean,
it can't go anywhere because it's in space, you know, but it'll turn on.
I just think it's a great in-your-face spoof, and I hope he does it, and I hope it works. And, you know, it's his money, well, and his shareholders' money, but.
It's his shareholders' money. He leverages a lot more than at least one of his competitors.
But he makes life interesting. I mean, there's no interest coming out of the bullet train again, for example. When's the last time anybody got interested or inspired by SLS?
Exactly nobody. Nobody in our community, nobody who tunes into your show, certainly.
Well, and nobody, I don't ever hear from any students that call in and say they want to go into being a space entrepreneur or study STEM topics or anything because of SLS. But oh my God, the inspiration of SpaceX, Musk, Gwen Shotwell when they hear her talk.
Sure.
Their outreach to students and to people. They're ready to go learn calculus and do the hard work. I don't hear anyone coming to that conclusion from hearing anybody talk about SLS.
No, everybody just calls it Apollo on Viagra and moves on.
But I just
am offended by the expense of it all, and the dragging delays of, as you say, just, you know, keeping essentially the wrong people employed for years at a time, building something that we're not going to have much use for once it's finished.
Tom, with a debt approaching $21 trillion, there is so much to be offended by with government spending. SLS is a drop in the bucket.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, we could.
I know, but it's not dropping the bucket when you focus that down on NASA's budget.
No,
they could be getting a lot more bang for the $18 billion that they're getting.
Absolutely. But there's just so much spending abuse across the board in government projects that why wouldn't there be in the space arena, too? And it is unfortunate because money is tight, and it's certainly tight in the space arena.
So, true.
I want to ride a Hyperloop, so I hope Musk is.
Well, there you go. Well, see, you and I will live to ride a Hyperloop.
I hope so. I don't care about riding on the damn bullet train to nowhere, but.
Compared to, like, you know, a shot to Mars or something, we might live long enough to actually ride a Hyperloop ourselves.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
I think there's a real,
so we'll have
a real
something.
Shot of that.
So some Musk project will be, you know, of actual significance to you and I.
That's another thing with the relevance of Musk and people like him. I mean, look at I'm an addicted Amazon shopper, and what Bezos has done with Amazon is, I mean, again, we're not talking space necessarily, but
right.
is unbelievable. And
he was my next topic, so why don't we just go there?
Okay.
You know, Elon he had a great, great, great year, but he's not the only player, obviously. Jeff Bezos also had a very great year. The maiden flight of the new Shepard 2.0 flew recently. It went almost to the edge of space. I mean, the official edge is like 62 miles or 100 kilometers. It went up 99 kilometers. I don't know if that was deliberate or not. I think it was. And they did a controlled vertical touchdown, just perfect. There was their test capsule, the next generation crew capsule, was on there. It did separate, and it came down independently on parachutes. And there was a crash test dummy inside it. I guess as a joke, they named it Mannequin Skywalker. But both craft came down safely, and I guess they're just moving forward as fast as they can. They hope to inaugurate some commercial flights next year as well, just for the suborbital stuff. Although work is starting on what they call the New Glenn orbital rocket. there's a lot less news on that because they still keep things very, you know, close to their vest, at that company. So
right.
We'll see, but A contrast between the two guys, Bezos and Musk, is that Musk leverages everything. He started with a lot of his own money, but now he's using other people's and just keeps leveraging, whether it's another funding round, you know, in the markets, or leveraging, various types of, you know, government programs. You get so much money if you accomplish this. And he's negotiated a lot of those to great effect. Bezos has the opposite. Does the opposite. He's extremely wealthy, and every time he needs a little more money for his program, he just sells some more shares of his company and writes himself a check.
Well,
and he's not doing a lot of outside investment right now.
And he also, Musk is a really flamboyant guy. He loves the media and press and stuff like that, and Jeff is much more reserved.
Yeah. Yeah. But they're moving forward very quickly. Sierra Nevada had a nice year. They finally got to their first glide flight of their Dream Chaser glider craft. And they're determined to also still be in the game.
Absolutely. And 2018 should be an interesting year for Dream Chaser.
I think so, too. I'm looking forward to watching that. I didn't get to see the first launch. I'm hoping they'll do something with some power this year and make it look interesting. Of course, we can't complete this part of it without talking about Virgin Galactic. They did roll out the replacement for the lost VSS Enterprise. It's called Unity, is the name of the craft. With big fanfare, they rolled out the new VSS Unity, and Richard Branson hopes to get that thing flying, hopefully earlier next year than later, but, the goal is definitely to fly in 2018. I'm looking forward to seeing that. There's a lot of people still lined up, and they kept their money in. Very few got out of the line, actually, as a result of the Enterprise disaster. Although I guess the final report came out earlier this year from NTSB saying that they thought that a lot of the blame for that crash pointed at Scale Composites, the contractor. They failed to consider human error in a very, you know, key spot of the flight program, and that really contributed heavily to the crash. So, which I thought was interesting. But one of the little, I'm not pointing at Virgin Galactic particularly, but since they used the original technology that won the XPRIZE to begin with, I wanted to raise an issue. I think we're all looking forward to multiple companies flying people who want to put down, you know, too much of their own money to go to space themselves. I mean, I had it, I'd do it too. But I think that hype train can only go so far. All these companies, including Virgin, I think have been very poor at managing public expectations. It's been 13 years now since Spaceship One flew and won the XPRIZE. And we all thought within 2 years, 5 years tops, someone would be flying paying passengers, presumably Virgin. And this has simply not happened. But people keep expecting it to. It's going to sound like the boy who cried wolf after a while. They're going, oh, next year, we're going to fly next year, we're going to fly next year. Well, how long, oh, Lord, how long? People have been waiting for a long, long time. People put their money down for a long, long time. It's a testament to their patience. But none of them are getting any younger either. So what do you think, David?
I think BS really rules here. And, you know, the interesting thing is suborbital flights, you know, have been going on since the beginning of our space program just about. Of course, they're trying to make them reusable and, you know, very quick turnaround times and stuff. That's a little bit harder to do. So I don't know why it's been so slow because the technology is known, and obviously they're making improvements in the technology. They're not necessarily reinventing the wheel here. So my take on it is that the hype that you're talking about, which I absolutely believe is extreme, can also be applied to the people that work for these companies in key engineering and development positions. Unless they have some real graybeards there that are in command positions and know what they're doing, I just think there's a lot of people doing on-the-job training, and it's hard and slow, and they would rather blow out exaggerations and other things to enhance ticket sales. Look how many years Virgin's been selling tickets. So if they were grounded in reality, they wouldn't be doing that. Here's another, we haven't talked on it yet, but you will, and that is our beloved boys at X-Core that were selling tickets as well. And people who understood business and finance, yourself, myself, Dr. Jurist, and a couple of others that followed X-Core, knew that this was unlikely to ever do anything other than end up the way it ended. And yet they're out there with their hype and their rhetoric, and they're, you know, making sales through their agents that they had. And I don't know what happened to the money that people put up. I don't know what happened to the stockholders. They must have been diluted many, many times over because they kept raising more money. And I guess in the end, they're liquidated at whatever pennies on the dollar their assets were liquidated for. Mm-hmm. But
there's a big hangar bay there at in Midland that is looking for a new, you know,
a new thing. But
tenant.
So
yeah.
I think part of the problem is the experience, the expertise, and the competence of a lot of the people that work for these companies. I don't think they have it. I think there's a lot of on-the-job learning that has been going on, and in many cases, maybe they're not really up to it. And unless they have really engaged graybeards and people who really know how to do this, and I don't know that they've done that. I know SpaceX brought on graybeards, and they had a tumultuous time with it, with Falcon 1, for example.
Uh-huh.
But that SpaceX has gone forward, and I think Blue is really tight to the lip, so we don't know for sure. But I've heard that they have a lot of experienced people at Blue that have been working for them and helping too. So I really think a lot of the delay has been just the lack of really expert people working in the companies to make this happen.
Well, imagine that. That's a shock. That's a shocking news for 2017. You know, graybeards are coming back into vogue.
Well, you know, I know when the space show started, we talked about graybeards going over to SpaceX all the time. So I know that there was sort of an in and out process, because Musk can be challenging to work with for sure. And I know a lot of graybeards that did work at SpaceX and then they'd move on because it was really hard to be at SpaceX. But he did tap into that community, and I'm sure that community played a very important role. Plus, remember, he had all these non-financial agreements and technology sharing with NASA. And the times that I toured SpaceX facilities, both at their old facility and at their new facility, there are always people from NASA there. So, and Gwen and Musk have been very generous in saying they wouldn't be where they were without the help of NASA helping them. So they did tap into that community. They didn't just use guys that had gone to MIT or Caltech and studied aerospace engineering. And I have a feeling a lot of the suborbital companies didn't do that to the extent that might have made their lives simpler.
Right. Yeah.
And in a way, we're seeing that now because you haven't talked about the small dedicated launcher, but you've got Rocket Labs in New Zealand, and you've got Vector out of Tucson. They're coming on board now. I know the people at Vector much better than I know about Rocket Labs. John Garvey's been launching rockets for ages.
For a long time.
Frequent guest on the show.
And, one of our launch companies went through the business plan competition. Generation Space. They had a really good year, I guess, as well. So I heard from them recently, and they've been doing some testing. They're doing an air launch system.
So But
and
yeah,
they've been having a good year as well, you know, doing test launches and things. So, I mean, all these guys are starting to actually come up and do something.
Yeah, and I think next year you're going to see a banner year on these dedicated small launchers. Now, whether
yep.
the market is there, all of this remains to be seen. I suspect it is there. But I think what's gone on in 2017 has laid an incredible foundation for moving forward.
Oh, yeah. Before we leave the launch segment, I only have a couple more comments. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that happened. You know, launches all over the world this year. And we're going to talk about, you know, the numbers on that in the next segment on finance and investment. But I just want to mention a couple of things that caught my eye. There's a ton of stuff being launched. But China has, as we know, has lunar ambitions. And working toward that this year, they sent a cargo, they sent up a space lab that they've had there for, you know, they've had for a while. And then they, this year they sent a cargo craft to the space lab. Now there's nobody in, there's no human cargo in any of these things. But what they focused on, which I thought was interesting, was robotic refueling exercises. And that's very important. I mean, a lot of people here talk about fuel stations and on-orbit servicing and refueling all over the place. The Chinese are actually doing these exercises in preparation for a lunar mission, and they're taking it seriously. So watch those guys.
That's right.
Also, there was a record set this year. India launched what they call their Polar Satellite Launch Vehicle. And they lofted a record 104 satellites to low Earth orbit. And that smashed the previous record, just smashed it. I think the previous record was 39 or something. They launched 104 satellites. 88 of them were from Planet Labs. I think they just changed the name to Planet recently. I just took the labs off. But I thought that was a really amazing feat this year.
Absolutely. By the way, you have your first listener email of the program.
Okay.
Hopefully.
Let me mention one more thing.
Okay.
I want to mention just one more thing, and then we'll take the email. How's that?
Okay.
I want to mention this. There's another company that I'm a big fan of, and you probably are too. They're called Made in Space.
Yes, big fan.
And they were the ones who sent the first 3D printer to the ISS. Well, they've launched a new machine just recently, and it's designed to specifically to print optical fiber on orbit. Now it's launched to ISS. And the interesting part, it was launched on a pre-flown Dragon capsule using a pre-flown booster. I thought it was just wicked cool, all that put together.
Yeah, and they're going to do printing experiments outside the station.
Oh, that's going to be amazing.
So they're going to end up perfecting that. Anyway, Michael Listener, our legal guru and expert for the space show, has chimed in on the hype that you were mentioning a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
And says the hype isn't limited to suborbital. A space tourism company is being sued for selling Russian lunar flights that never materialized. And, of course, the space tourism hype, forget the launch vehicle, has been really out there in force ever for the last 13 years, maybe longer. And we still don't have a date, a
yep.
realistic date of when any of this is going to take place.
Yeah, that is a very true comment. We still don't know, and we won't know until something actually flies, and we can talk about it. This is why I don't do much prognostication anymore on that particular spot, because I'm tired of being wrong all the time. So. So I just don't talk about it. I know the company that you're talking about using the Russian boosters. I mean, there's a lot of legal aspects involved there that they're fighting back and forth on, and technicalities, and it's still working its way, you know, through the courts. But one thing I do know, because I know the people involved, is that their business model got screwed almost the day the shuttle was retired. Because at that point, Russia started jacking up the prices by two or three times for using their launch services, And, of course, for a seat on a Soyuz, they also jacked up the price. So given all the only equipment that they owned were some reusable capsules that they bought from Russia years and years ago, the launch cost really kind of hosed them, because it also, that launch cost also applied to private commercial launches, not just NASA. They jacked it up for everybody across the board.
Right.
So their business model was just blown away when that happened.
Well, if they had good business people on hand, there was certainly no surprise that the shuttle was going to be retired. The Columbia Accident Review Board said they needed to retire it, what, 5 or 6 or 7 years before it actually got retired? I mean,
right.
To not be able to factor something like that into your business planning, hey, you know, you get what you deserve. That's the market sometimes, Tom, as you well know, can be a very cruel teacher.
It is. It is very, very harsh. I've learned it. You've learned it. Everybody who's been in anything for any amount of time.
And unlike,
learned that lesson one time or another.
That's right. And unlike our political world, the market can be truly objective without playing favorites.
Yeah.
And it can dump on anyone and everyone, even the big guys as well as the small mom and pop guys. So,
and that, which chases back to X-Corps just a little bit, because everybody goes on, you want to see the hype. A lot of the hype comes from the fact that more and more investment is coming in, and we'll talk about that later. But they don't talk about, always in any new industry, there's going to be some fallout along the way. There's going to be consolidation. There's going to be failure. And maybe X-Corps may look at one of the biggest failures of this whole thing, but we're going back, you know, 17 years since we started these conversations, and it was bound to happen. Someone we know was not going to succeed after spending millions and millions of dollars of other people's money, and you know, it's finally happened. There will be more.
Well, look at Rocket Plane. They bit the dust years before they did. I mean, so, you know, they went down the tubes, and there have been others, but X-Corps was pretty spectacular.
But to hear Chuck Lauer talk, you'd think Rocket Plane Interstellar was still in business.
It is. Have you seen their new website?
I've seen Chuck. He talks it up all the time. He's still a true believer. You know, God bless him. Maybe he'll finally get some deal together and raise some capital and do something, but we'll see. I mean, some of these guys hang in there because they don't know what else to do.
I've invited him on the show, but he keeps saying he's not ready yet, not ready yet. So
yeah, but he delivered like 5 papers or something at IEC, but he's not ready for your show. Okay.
Well, he doesn't want to face an audience, you know, like the space show audience.
They're tough. They can be tough.
Well, and it's not controllable. You know, if you're at a space conference, pretty much the audience is in a way can be predictable. You know, you can kind of limit your exposure in a way, but not when you're on a radio and you don't know who's calling or who's emailing and where it's going to come from. Someone could come in and ask me about a shopping center development for all I know.
Uh-huh. Well, ask Bob Orb about that, because shopping center developments are okay.
Well, I don't usually use Bob and Chuck together, but Bob is a great friend. Well, Chuck is a great friend too, but Bob has also been a very, very loyal supporter of the space show ever since I've met him, and I just think he's a wonderful guy and very, 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 very bright guy. Extremely bright.
Yeah, we just did a big retreat for the Center for Space Commerce and Finance out at Bob's place in Vermont. It's near a ski area.
Uh-huh.
We spent like 3 days there, and it was just an amazing time. Bob is a great host as all the other good things he does.
Absolutely. He's a space champion as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. Okay, so want to move ahead a little bit. I mean, I know you're probably getting ready for a break here in a little bit, but
well,
we can
in 15 minutes. So, what was your grouping after launch?
Okay, what I have grouping after launch is obviously the stuff we love to talk about, which is finance and investment. portion of the program. We'll just dive in, I guess. Last year, and this is pretty interesting because I found through one, this is one group called Bryce Group, and they put out this annual report, which is so full, I could spend a whole show just talking about that. But a brief thing, 114 investors this last year put $2.8 billion into 43 new space ventures spread out across 49 separate deals. Let that sink in.
And where did you get your numbers?
Again, from this outfit called Bryce. Let me get there. Here it is. Okay. It's Bryce. It's called Bryce Space and Technology. They're a think tank kind of group, and they just offered for free download something they call Startup Space, which is an update on investment in commercial space ventures for 2017. Oh, I see the name. Okay, forget it. Never mind. You know these guys. They used to be called the Tory Group.
Oh, yeah, that's what's-her-name's new group.
Yes, they changed their name to Bryce Space and Technology.
I'm forgetting the name of the woman I always want to get on the space show, and she hasn't come on yet.
Uh-huh.
Who this is really her area of expertise. I can't believe I can't. Christensen.
Yeah.
What the hell's her? It'll come to me. They're really authentic and pros, and they really have good data.
But here's the interesting part. Again, all we're talking about really, and we'll get to this a little bit later in the program. All we're really talking about still is launch support services and payloads. So just for that, there's a ton of other stuff we need to talk about. But for that, according to these guys, Startup Space Ventures attracted over $16.6 billion of investment, which includes $5.1 billion in debt financing since the year 2000. And so over 140 angel and venture-backed space companies have been founded and funded since 2000. 15 of these companies have been acquired at a total value of $3.2 billion. So that's pretty good.
Absolutely.
But 86% of that capital investment just happened in the last 5 years. So there is a bit of a knee curve with that for the venture on the venture capital side. Some of it came from just a handful of people like Jeff Bezos, has invested more than $1 billion of his own money in Blue Origin since 2000. Google and Fidelity invested $1 billion in SpaceX in 2015, and SoftBank put $1.2 billion in OneWeb just last year. So in the last 5 years, the number of funded new space companies is averaged 17 per year. And the 80% of the value of the acquisitions has just been in the last 5 years.
By the way, it's Carissa Christensen.
Yes.
And
you need to get her on the show.
You know,
they've got some amazing data here.
Yeah, she always says she's too busy. But I've had other people from the Tory Group, not Bryce since they changed their name, but I've had a lot of other guests that have been on the show from the Tory Group, now Bryce. But Carissa has been evasive. I hope one day she will be a guest on the show. I absolutely look forward to that. She is a wealth of knowledge and expertise in these areas.
Mm-hmm.
And a very nice lady.
Yeah.
And listeners, if you go to things like AIAA meetings and other big institutional organizational space meetings, you can meet Carissa and people like that because they hang out there.
Sure.
Just a thought.
Yep.
In terms of finance and investment, here's what bothers me. I'm very pleased that 2017 is continuing this growth trend, by the way, so I'm not objecting to that. But and this goes back to one of the very early things that you worked on, and we used to do a lot of shows on, and there was amazing interest in what you were talking about, and that is the Colony Fund, which would have been investment opportunity in these companies for Mary and Joe Sixpack and
yep.
people like our listeners and me. Now you can be a private placement investor with Musk, but none of us can do that. You know,
and yep, and still,
and
there's
on.
Still no big space investment for the rest of us.
That's right. It hasn't opened up.
It hasn't opened up. Now, here's the thing, though. I got to say, yeah. I mean, two reasons that you know, Colony Fund didn't get very far. We had to like close it down.
Well, you were years ahead of your time.
We were years ahead of our time, and that doesn't just include the investment opportunities, which were far more lacking back then than they are now, and across multiple fields. And the idea that we just didn't have the tools. With new legislation came new types of investment tools like equity crowdfunding, which leads to all sorts of new opportunities. I don't think you can quite build it up to the level we wanted to build it up to originally, but there's an opportunity coming. A project like that might be able to be revived by the right group of people. I have nothing to announce right now, but who knows? Wait till next year. I mean, I'm talking to some people, so that's all I'm going to say about it.
Listen, I was with you at conference after conference where you talked about Colony Fund, and there was enormous interest. This goes back 15, 13,
yeah.
12 years ago to
15
this.
15 years, yeah.
I mean, and even among professional people, there was enormous interest in it. You were really ahead of your time. I mean, there's no ands and ifs and doubts and buts about it. And I think the time has come, but I'm not sure that most of the entrepreneurial companies are able to go through sort of a public regulatory process where they could be in a public mutual fund.
Yeah.
And we're not seeing them kick into this equity Kickstarter program,
well,
which has much easier requirements.
Again, if all you're talking about is launch, support services, and payloads, you are absolutely right. But there are other things that we've pioneered, and one idea is called Space Scalable, which is a term describing startup and early stage companies. They're developing technologies. They're actually built for deployment and profit right here on planet Earth, but the technologies themselves could be scaled to solve a specific space problem years down the road when the market for that actually exists when they start building settlements on the moon and Mars and in the asteroid belt and elsewhere in space. Because launch support services and payloads are all great. It's really sexy. It's also the most expensive component of becoming a spacefaring species. That's only three of the problems we need to solve. We probably have 1,000 problems we need to solve in order to become a spacefaring species. And they don't involve launch or payloads or support services at all, but they involve health, they involve resource development, they involve other forms of transportation, they involve all sorts of things, they involve robotics, artificial intelligence, just standard IT type stuff, especially hardened to handle the space environment, nanotech, biotech, mining. There's a ton of stuff out there, problems that we need to solve, and they're not getting the attention that at all compared to launch support services and payloads, with the sexiest but also the most expensive piece of the puzzle.
Now, I have another story for you on this.
Sure.
So I know you know Jim Caravalla.
Yeah.
Okay, so
every
year Jim comes on the show, he has a different grandiose plan, okay, so for how they're going to develop the moon. So he was just on the show a week ago. So are you ready for the latest version of Caravalla 2.2?
Oh, bring it.
Which is called Offworld. But here's what he didn't use the term, but it is 100% Tom Olson, space scalable, focus on terrestrial businesses and industries that can be easily extrapolated into space development and research projects. So he's starting out with the mining industry. Sound familiar, anyone? I thought, Jesus, this is Tom Olson from 10 years ago at the ISDC introducing Space Scalable and on the show.
In 2008, yeah.
Yeah, this is all they're doing is focusing on what they can do terrestrially that will give them cash flow and profits. Sound familiar, Tom? And
yep.
Then they can apply their cash flow and profits to developing the moon or cislunar or whatever.
Well,
and everything is related and symbiotic and, you
well,
know,
thank
kumbaya.
God. Well, this is the testament to the private sector, David. Don't you understand? It
no,
only took them 10 years to catch up, rather than 30.
So, but, you know, listeners, I wouldn't discount what Tom says. I mean, he may be 10 years visionary in advance of where the markets end up, but he's batting 100% as far as I'm concerned. When I heard Jim's latest and greatest plan, I'm thinking vintage Tom Olson. Wow. Tom's got to hear this show.
Someone else is doing that too.
But others are doing it too.
They don't use the words.
No, that's
the
right.
My words are trademarked, by the way, because no one wants to use them. But, you know, because they'd actually have to ask permission, and I probably say yes. I'm not going to charge them anything, but they won't use them. But there's another outfit. I'm going to talk about this in a second. Called Starbridge Capital, and they're forming a fund, and they've already done a soft launch. They hope to raise like $50 million. And they're doing it via their partner, Livingston Securities, in New York. One of the people who's joined Starbridge, this is run by Steve Jorgensen.
Okay.
You may know who he is.
Very solid
guy. He's run a very successful hedge fund for many, many years.
Right.
And I wish I'd invested in it like 5 years ago. But there you go. I know Steve very well, and he... I think I was the one who actually turned him on. I may have turned him on to Scott Livingston. I don't know, or somebody else did. And it's all kind of incestuous. Everybody kind of knows everybody. But Mike Mehling, you may remember him.
Yeah,
He joined Starbridge, and when he first talked about that on his LinkedIn page, he made exactly the same comment. He was describing basically Space Scalable when they were talking about their investment strategy. Now I was the one who talked Steve Jorgensen into this, and now Mike Mehling is talking about it like he invented the thing. So this is happening, and that's okay as long as it happens. We're still supporting, we're still pushing this. This is one of our raison d'etres for the Center for Space Commerce and Finance, which I'll also talk about in the next segment. That's our wheelhouse, and we'll be pushing that very hard. We're trying to actually work out deals with funding companies that. Startup and early stage companies that go through our space business plan competition program and our boot camp programs, for, you know, an annual stipend of some kind, they would have like first crack at these guys. So we've done a lot of the vetting for them. But that's a little something for a little bit later. But continuing on the finance side,
okay.
This is the important thing because, the $50 million that Starbridge wants to raise is actually kind of small. Now, according to the Seraphim Space Index, VCs in general poured $3 billion over the last 12 months or so into space ventures. Morgan Stanley and B of A Merrill pegged the current industry value about $350 billion, and satellites are $261 billion of that. But there's an outfit called Seraphim, which was putting together a $100 million space investment fund.
How do you spell their name?
Seraphim, S-E-R-A-P-H-I-M. You can look them up.
S-E-R-P-H-I-M.
Seraphim, yeah.
Okay.
They're starting up a $100 million space fund. Starbridge is shooting for 50. Letitia Garriott, whom you may know, she's the wife of Richard Garriott.
Right.
She's starting up something called Global Space Ventures. They are shooting for $300 million in investment. And another company called Starburst Ventures, which I'm just getting into, is putting together a $200 million space investment fund. That's $500, $550, that's $650 million between them all if they succeed. And let's not forget... tax havens like Luxembourg, who has dedicated $227 million for asteroid mining. That's nearly $1 billion and potential investment capital in space industry in the private sector all coming online about the same time.
It is a hot item. There's no doubt about it.
Well, especially since that same report from Morgan Stanley also and B of A also estimate that the value of the industry as a whole could range from between 1.1 to 2.7 trillion by 2040.
Well, and Goldman Sachs put out a really fabulous report for 2017 as well.
Yeah.
So
it's huge.
It has people's attention. I think we're going to take our halfway pause, and
you
can get a drink of codeine or something.
There we go.
that ought to stop the coughing. Listeners, we're going to be back. We do want to hear from you, okay? And you're strangely silent. I know it's Friday morning, and you may be tying one on at an office party. But give us a call, even if you've tied one on. Tom can handle that. 1-866-687-7223 is our toll-free number. Email will continue. Dr. Space, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. Back in 3 minutes.
The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible. The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible.
I'm Dr. David Livingston, creator and host of The Space Show, and I would like to share my vision with you for not only this radio program, but for space development. Space should be like any other place we choose to visit, work in, or call our home. It should be just another destination, like Tahiti, Hawaii, or any place available to us right now on Earth. When this vision becomes reality, we will be spacefaring in our culture, our economy, our society, and in our lives. Our world will be vastly improved by countless space-related benefits, transforming our lives both in space and right here on Earth. And the Space Show is helping to make this vision a global reality.
And welcome back, everybody. Part two of our last Friday show of 2017. Our guest is Tom Olson. We do have some sponsors we want to thank for this segment. Orbital ATK is a global leader in aerospace and defense technologies and the partner you can count on for advanced, reliable space propulsion systems, space exploration, commercial ventures, and defense programs. The American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics, AIAA, is our sponsor. Again, they have over 30,000 individual members. 88 countries are represented, nearly 100 corporate members, and they shape the future of aerospace every day. Check them out at AIAA.org. Attend their events, networking to die for, academic papers that are the backbone of the industry, a great organization. And then Celestis is also our sponsor. They are still the only proven provider of Memorial spaceflight services. They launch from 4 locations now. Talk about growth in your business. New Mexico, New Zealand. They're going to the moon, everybody, with Moon Express on the Rocket Labs rocket. They launch from the Cape, and they launch from Vandenberg. So depending on the kind of flight you want and what you want your loved one's ashes to experience, or your own DNA for that matter, you can include that. You've got opportunities to choose from, and one of these days you're going to have a Celestis opportunity for internment at Mars. This is a great company. I am their customer. They've launched my mom and my dogs to space 3 different times. And as I keep saying to everybody, they're probably the finest, if not the finest, business I've ever dealt with in my life. I can't say enough about Celestis. Their website, Celestis.com. And Tom Olson is our guest. We're doing our annual Space Year in Review, and we're starting up on Segment 2. So, Tom, what do you want to address in Segment 2?
Well, we're still talking about finance. Business
okay.
and finance. So the question we've talked about, nearly $900 million is going to be committed through various funding mechanisms in the coming years to space business development. So it might behoove us to actually ask the question, where will the growth come from to justify the investment? Now, there's a lot of different ways. I mean, there's still going to be micro launchers and all the other things that we've been talking about, but Morgan Stanley analyzed this recently, and it thinks there's a huge stake of the growth going forward. It's going to be in the Internet. When you look at things like Google Loon, SpaceX doing their 4,100 satellite constellation, and OneWeb, which has completed a $1.2 billion round that we mentioned recently, and they want to do the same thing. It's estimated there's a $400 billion annual revenue opportunity for companies that can provide Internet access to underserved areas. I could see where a lot of that investment could go. Now, the other good news is, I have to make a shameless plug here, I'm also involved with a company that's attempting to do the same thing. My current gig is a director of business development for a company called Avialto Limited, which is based in the UK. And we are also working with our development partner, JP Aerospace, in developing a high altitude platform that would sit between 20 and 25 kilometers in some very calm sky and do exactly the same thing. It would do broadband internet and mobile backhaul to underserved areas. Now, you think, when you talk about underserved areas, you probably think like the Moroccan desert or something, but it's not necessarily true. There are people in Romania we're talking to. There are people outside of Phoenix that we're talking to. Underserved areas has a huge, it's very loosely defined. And there's going to be plenty of room for competition in this. We've already finished our, JP just finished the prototype and did the first float test inside a building on October 7th. And we're just waiting on FAA approval so we can start our test flight program with the prototype. It's about a half-size model. This is where we wring out all the bugs and get the equipment flying. Probably not any higher than about 40,000 feet. We're just testing all the systems. And then we hope in 2018 we'll start building our first commercial version, which will be 60 meters long and will go up to full altitude. So this is an exciting time, and I'm glad to see that Merrill Lynch is kind of backing us as far as the opportunity goes by saying $400 billion revenue opportunity. Yeah, we want to tap into that. And the idea of stealing a little bit of Elon Musk's lunch money also appeals to me. So there you go.
Okay. Does that take us out of finance to the next group?
Yeah, well, I wanted to mention one more thing because I mentioned it kind of as a sidebar, when we talk about, you know, space scalable, and everybody likes to use the term now while not using it, this is part of what the Center for Space Commerce and Finance wants to do, is provide more data. We have, as you've just heard across the last couple of segments, you've heard about all the billions and billions have been putting into new space ventures. Most of it is launch and support services and payloads, and all those numbers are tracked very well. How do you track a space scalable investment? Well, I mean, everybody's talking about it, but no one's doing it, and that's going to be something that we're going to be doing at the center. We're going to be gathering that data for companies that are started up and funded in all areas and all sectors, including mining and IT and AI and robotics and biotech. I mean, if there's 100 biotech companies that started next year, well, how many of those would actually be truly space scalable type of technologies, and how much money is being put into those? We want to gather that data and report it to you. And so you know about every aspect of space business development, not just, again, launch and support services and payloads. So that's what the center will provide starting next year. Okay. And hope you'll look forward to that report. Anyway, I want to talk really just briefly on the policy side. I mean, there's been stuff happening in the policy side. I haven't paid much attention, but I just wanted to raise the question for you and your listeners. President Trump just recently, a what he calls the Space Policy Directive 1, which focuses on a return to the moon and as a foundation for Mars exploration. Just prior to that, the National Space Council was revived. What do you think about that?
I'm supportive of it. I mean, the risk is we've heard all these lofty administration plans before, going back how many decades, and how many of them ever materialized. So,
right.
Will this one prove to be different? It certainly has all the earmarkings that it will prove to be different, but I can't say that for certainty.
Yeah, I mean, the National Space Council did have a good purpose when it was first done as an advisory group. You can't say it didn't. It was, when was that thing canceled? The end of Reagan's term? It was canceled a long time ago.
A long time ago, yeah.
Yeah, and so bringing it back, I thought, was significant. See, there's a lot of stuff. I mean, it's not a political program. I don't want to get into it too much. I mean, say what you want about Trump, and everybody dumps on him and, you know, and his crazy tweets and all the other stuff. But the stuff he's doing, you know, kind of almost behind the scenes when nobody's looking, is pretty amazing, and it's going to have some serious consequences going forward. So usually he doesn't try to put something out there unless he really intends to go through with it and means it. So we'll see what happens on the space policy directive. I'll be curious. He's got another 3 years at least to keep pushing that through. So we'll see what happens if we see a definite plan. Because what you need, regardless of who's putting out the policy directives, you need some kind of plan that can extend across the range of multiple presidents. This is the problem that we've had in space policy. Because under Bush, we had Moon, Mars, and Beyond, and all the things they were going to do there, and they were casually just kind of shunted aside when Obama came in, and then he started looking more toward privatizing, which is fine. But he also was looking at sending astronauts to an asteroid somewhere. Well, that's now been quietly shunted aside, and now we're back to the moon and using that as a springboard to go to Mars. So if a program comes out of that and a directive for NASA that comes out of that that can withstand funding pressure for multiple years and maybe at least one more president, if not two, then we may have something. Otherwise, it's just more empty air.
Well, I don't think it will be empty air, but these are strange, you know, policy making and political times, and you've got members of Congress that seem to be more interested in, you know, themselves and their political ideology than the nation, and so I don't know how it's all going to shape up. I would like to think that we do go back to the moon and we do plan on going to Mars, and I think that would be a great direction to go on, and so I hope it materializes.
Well, I just have this strange feeling that Elon Musk, if anybody, is going to get to Mars long before NASA does.
Probably. But he may not. He's also talked about using his rockets and going to the moon as a stepping stone first, too. So he has talked about participating in that kind of learning experiment.
And Blue Origin's New Glenn could probably make that trip as well. That's the first orbital rocket. And then they have another whole big series of them going forward, New This and New That. They're all named after astronauts. New Armstrong would actually be designed to go to the moon. Everybody's working the problem. And the private sector is probably going to come up with answers long before the public sector does, is my thinking at this point.
Uh-huh. I wonder, do you think that it's gonna succeed? And if midterm elections come up and change the makeup of Congress, could that change and impact the National Space Council, for example?
Oh, probably not right up front. If Congress changed hands, which I think is highly doubtful in 2018, honestly, that's a separate conversation. They'd be too busy trying to undo everything Trump has done to worry about whether the National Space Council has Republicans or Democrats on it. I don't think policy change is going to change much because it's still focused too much on SLS, no matter who's in office. And so they probably won't even notice it. It's such a tiny budget item.
I think SLS has bipartisan commitment, so I don't see that going anywhere.
Well, yeah. That's because of Nelson and Shelby.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, they're the ones that keep that going.
So, and I think... the National Space Council has tentacles out there with the commercial sector, with Musk and the others. So I think that influence will survive whatever congressional changes there are. So I guess the real key would be, would it continue if the administration changes in, 2022?
Uh-huh.
Then would we finally have a space program and policy that had continuity from one administration to another, or would be back to the same old games? New president, new administration, new space policy.
Well,
another
kind of what happens. I mean, I don't have a lot of faith in that. That's why I'm kind of concerned that any policy that made has to be a long-term policy that covers multiple administrations, and everybody has to commit to it. And we were more focused on things like that back in the old days of Apollo. And that program did actually encompass three different presidents. And that was the last time we did something like that.
Well, I think policy is going to be really exciting because policy is going to drive a lot of the commercial investment. So if policy goes south, some of this planned commercial investment may be delayed or sit on the sidelines or scale back. Instead of scaling, space scalable, we'll have space scaling back. And,
well, we'll see. Because
we'll see.
Again,
I don't know.
Space scalable is something that has benefits right here on the ground. So what you might see is something I would love to see. So some of that investment capital is being pulled back from launch services. It'll look for somewhere else to go. And here's a great answer. And we at the Center for Space Commerce and Finance will be pushing that answer day in and day out, for all the coming years.
I have an email from you for our listener.
Sure.
And listeners, we really do hope you can call, and you can send in more emails too. I know our conversation is spellbinding here, and you're just glued to your computer speaker. 1-866-687-7223. Charlene says I'm in the safe part of Chicago, whatever that means. So I'm glad you're safe, Charlene.
Well, those safe spaces are fewer and further between there, so
that's
good for
right.
you, Charlene.
That's right, and bullets can have longer and longer range, too. So stay safe, Charlene. But she wants to know, what is your assessment of human spaceflight in 2017 as compared to the previous year, and will it be much different in 2018?
Okay. Obviously, human spaceflight has pretty much so far been limited to trips back and forth to the International Space Station, which are all still being flown on Russian Soyuz spacecraft. We would like to see that change in 2018. All the makers of capsules, well, two or three of them that I know of, all really, really want to get their man rating, and they want to be able to fly next year. So if we see even one commercial private astronaut mission to ISS, just to deliver, you know, new staff and take back people that have been up there for a while, that would be an amazing feat. I'm not going to predict that it's going to happen, because I've predicted things like this before and have completely, utterly failed. I'm just not going there anymore. So so I'm not 100% on that, David. They're all claiming they think they can do it, and they're ready. So really what comes down to it is whether NASA thinks they're ready and is willing to actually plunk the money down for a mission. And that's really what it comes down to in the end.
So do you think it'll change in 2018 or be more or less the same?
I'm going to say safely that it's going to be more or less the same, unless somebody actually gets human rated and they actually, so you actually read online or in the newspapers that NASA signed a contract with Boeing or SpaceX to launch a Dragon or a CST-100 to actually fly astronauts to the ISS. I mean, I'm not going to believe it until I see it. So they say they're ready or they're close to ready. And again, you know, that doesn't matter. What matters is whether NASA thinks they're ready, because they'd be the one plunking down the check. So we can only see. I mean, there might be private commercial flights. There could be maybe one of these crafts could go up privately if you get three or four people to plunk down, you know, $20 million each to just go up in orbit for a week. I mean, they did it on Soyuz for a long time before the shuttle shut down. So that's always a possibility. But I'll wait for the announcement.
I don't think we will see commercial space tourism in 2018. Do you?
No, not really. I don't expect it. I'm just saying this is what's possible. But none of that happens until someone actually puts down a check and they put out the press release. So I'll wait for the press release. Otherwise, it's going to be business as usual in 2018, I'm assuming.
Okay, I have another question for you from a listener.
Okay.
Robert is in Boston. And Robert says one of the things that you really haven't talked about as a possible impact agent, either good or bad, but I'm thinking mostly bad, would be world events that might happen. So some that are sort of predicted for 2018 that maybe could influence the direction of space economics would be the stock market bubble bursting, the housing and real estate market bubbles bursting, North Korea actually attempting to fulfill some of their rhetorical promises, with Trump actually finally taking action over and above sanctions. And there are probably other things as well, Iran as a trouble spot. So how vulnerable is space commerce in 2018 to external events that could go on in the world?
Well, you know, I'm reminded of a quote from one of my favorite spiritual authors named Dan Millman, another California resident.
Yeah, I've met Dan. I used to know him. I haven't been in touch with him.
Yeah, like he says, we can only control our actions, not the outcomes. Now, a lot of the things that Robert, was it?
Yeah, Robert.
Yeah, Robert mentioned are things that you and I, or the space agency, or Elon Musk, or Jeff Bezos, or George Whitesides, these are things that you and I and all of these people have really no control over. There could also be a big banking dollar meltdown. There could be other types of things. They want to start, you know, drilling in the Arctic and doing all this other stuff in an attempt to lessen Saudi Arabia's economic influence on the world. I mean, there's all sorts of things going on that average people like you and I, or even people, you know, high up in the stratosphere, have no control over at all. Personally, I don't think Trump is so Looney Tunes that he's just going to start a major war with North Korea, which could lead to an EMP burst over half the country. That just doesn't ring true to me. I mean, I don't see a guy like that starting war, you know, huge global conflicts for no reason at all. I mean, where's the profit in that? You know, it's bad for business. He wants policies that are good for business and good for everybody and bring jobs to the country. So I think he'll think many, many times before trying to do something like that. He wants to engage China. China's not being very good right now. I don't want to get into this in too much detail. But as far as, does it affect commercial space? Well, some of commercial space might be affected if everybody's focused elsewhere. And there's a major financial crisis. Sure, the market for space tourism is going to drop. But since it's only a market on paper anyway, how much impact is there really? People won't be flying until people start flying, and we still don't know when that's going to be. We don't have it. You and I don't have any control over that either, over that outcome. We've been waiting 13 years, and if we have to wait a couple more, well, there it is. Spacecraft still flew in 2008. They still flew in 2001. The next crisis to come along could be worse than both of those combined, but I predict that rockets are still going to launch because there is a launch manifest and the services have already been paid for. And while the demand for launch services overall may drop for a brief period, they're not going to plummet to zero. And there's a lot of great new technologies out there that are always being deployed to make people's lives better, and they're still going to be deployed to make people's lives better, even if we end up 5 years from now with a different currency. Business will continue to be done as it always has been. So you can stay up nights just worrying about the state of the world and what if this could happen and what if that could happen. And, you know, every morning I just have to get up and try to make Avi Alto the best company I can make it, and, you know, and work for the Center for Space Commerce and Finance and all the things we want to do there. I guess that's the best answer I can offer. We can only, it goes back to the quote, we can control our actions, we can't control the outcome. So I get up every day trying to control my actions.
Okay. excuse me. I think that's a good answer. I mean, we don't even know the truth of what goes on with all these issues that Robert mentioned. We only know what our news media tells us, and I don't know how trustworthy everybody is of our news media. You know, the United States news media now ranks about number 48 of out of Western countries. I mean, it keeps dropping by 6 or 7 points every year.
Right.
So take that for whatever you want it to mean. It doesn't mean much to me. I think it's a despicable news media now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so to rely on what we hear about all of these events that Robert is talking about and believe that that is actual reality, I'd be pretty skeptical.
Yeah.
But as you say, I have no control over it, so move on.
Yeah. Well, going ahead, I know we're running out of time. I want to touch on this other project I'm involved with called the Center for Space Commerce and Finance. You've heard of it before. And we're the new owners and proprietors in the New Space Business Plan competition. And this year we actually had three regional events in Salt Lake City, St. Louis, and Austin. The Austin event was really poignant. That was just this last November, in which there were seven companies presenting. They were all really, really good. And our idea, the prizes, there's like small prizes, like $2,500 prizes that were sponsored by Heinlein Prize Trust, our good friends there, that supported us for many, many years. Well, At the Austin event, the judges were so enamored with a second company, they didn't feel right that only one company should win, so the judges actually dipped into their own pockets to provide a second $2,500 prize for a second company.
Who was it?
It's a company based in the Boston area that provided this incredible medical device. It's very lightweight, and it only costs a couple hundred dollars, and you blow into it, and it just creates this old diagnostic of a whole bunch of different physical things. And they looked at that and said, yeah, we'd love to see something like this, you know, at ISS, testing it out for medical stuff.
Do you remember
the biotech company?
Do you remember the name of the company?
Not right offhand. I'm terrible about that. I should have, let's put my notes together. I should have put all those notes together, and I just didn't quite get there in time.
Who won the first place?
That was a company that basically it's almost a space cannon, but you can't really call it that because it has an interesting way the platform deploys. It's basically a cannon-like thing to launch the first stage, and then the second stage would be a regular rocket. It was really clever how they did it, and they've already built this thing on a small scale, and the guy even brought a sample. Here's what it looks like. And that impressed the hell out of everybody. But so they actually gave away two grand prizes in Austin, and the judges themselves actually dipped into their own pockets to do that. One was Gary Taylor, and the other was Richard and Letitia Garriott.
Pretty interesting that they would do that.
Yes. But as a result of these events and as a result of other things we've been doing, we got tapped. Now, this is what I want to pitch, is for 2018. As part of ISDC, the International Space Development Conference, in 2018, which is the end of May in Los Angeles at the Sheraton, I believe, we've been tapped to provide an entire two-day symposium on the business and finance side.
In addition or before or after?
No, during.
So you're going to compete with other ISDC tracks?
Yep, we are directly, and we were asked to do this. And we're doing a two-day symposium. It's the 26th and 27th of May. And we're going to have such things as, again, a regional business plan competition. We're going to revive, you might be interested in this, David, this is kind of your neighborhood. We're going to revive and enhance the Space Investment Summit.
Well, I'm planning to be there this year.
Good. Then you're going to have a lot to report on because it's going to be really, really excellent.
Well,
we're also doing something in concert with the Highline Prize Trust, something we call Farmer in the Sky. And we're going to have a series of panels and talks on all the aspects of agriculture in the high frontier. And we're going to have real people who are involved in doing real agriculture, not just NASA engineers speculating. And we're going to talk about how we can get this done and feed people quality food on the moon, Mars, and beyond. And we'll also have a couple of really great panels about the new commercial ecosystem and how that works, and, you know, war stories panels and things like that. So it's going to be a pretty incredible series of events over a two-day period. And, yes, everyone needs to come out to ISDC next year and take part in that.
Well, I am planning to be there, so if I can participate with you or do anything, we'll certainly talk about it.
That would be great, and maybe we'll do another show as the time gets closer.
Yeah, let me
talk about that in depth.
Just let me know.
A lot of things will be more fleshed out by then.
Yeah, just let me know. And
sure.
I would look forward to it. I have another listener email for you. And
sure.
Guys and gals, come on. I mean, I can't believe none of you are available by telephone. 1-866-687-7223. Okay, so Chester is in Wichita, Kansas.
Hello, Chester.
And Chester says, I'm on Christmas vacation, and I love space, and I'm screwing around on the internet, and I found this discussion. So I've been listening to it. I think space settlement is our future, and yet you haven't said one word about space settlement either for the current year that's ending or moving forward. So what do you think about space settlement? To me, it's the most exciting thing about space.
Well, to me, I think space settlement is one of the most exciting things about space. I think that is part and parcel a necessity for our future as a species. I haven't gone into specific details on who's doing what there, because we could do a whole show on that just by itself. There's so much stuff going on. As I mentioned earlier in the program, you know, we're covering a couple hours here. We could easily do 4 or 5 over everything. We wanted to cover everything. Space settlement's important. There's a lot of different groups and a lot of different advocacy organizations like the National Space Society, like the Space Frontier Foundation, and the Planetary Society, many others, who all talk about and promote the idea of space settlement. They usually do it from a policy standpoint, but then there are actual smaller groups that you don't hear about very much, and smaller companies that are actually trying to do something to help that along. Mars One is one of those. I just throw that out there off the top of my head. But yes, it's vital. I think it's vitally important to our future as a species. But I mean, there's a lot of other aspects of that that, again, this program is too short to go into. But maybe we can do another program like that sometime, David. We can just focus on space settlement. I'd be happy to come on, and maybe a couple other people, and we can have a lively discussion.
I'm happy to do it, depending on who the others are. And here's the reason why I'm giving caveats.
Sure.
Because I've done a lot of space settlement programming, and here's what happens. You either get airheads on who this is a religion and a cult,
yep,
and therefore there's nothing of value that they're saying. Okay, it's just, you know, even their plausibility for technology is not even plausible. So I don't want that. So,
well, no, what we do is we have a finance guy like me, and then you have, you know, with his feet on the ground, then you have someone from the advocacy community.
Who's also got to have feet on the ground.
Right. And they exist.
Yeah, well.
Thanks to people like you and I, they exist now. They didn't used to many, many years ago.
Chester, here's how I'm open to it, Tom. So,
okay.
Chester, here is my comment to you. Because real space settlement is dependent upon a lot of technologies, and our TRLs, which are technology readiness levels, are still fairly low, you're not going to see in 2017, you didn't see in 2017, you probably won't see in 18 or for a couple of more years, actual progress toward physically establishing a space settlement. But what is happening, and I think 2017 was a good year for this, and I think it will continue, is on the policy side, possibly a start on the regulatory side. There are two companies that want to have private space stations, which could be early stage space settlement. So one is Axiom, which is developing a private space station. Of course, Bigelow is doing another one. And in a sense, you've got the Deep Space Gateway that may or may not ever happen, but that's a lunar orbiting space station. And, you know, a space station is kind of like a space settlement. So I think we're laying the policy and regulatory and interest groundwork, but we need to improve our TRLs. We're dependent upon, you know, economic launches. We're dependent upon closed loop systems for environmental control or better environmental control management and a couple of things like that. And but the leading indicators are probably policy and regulatory right now, and that's where I think you're going to see the interest and the progress being made for the next couple of years. But it's definitely on everyone's agenda, and it's definitely waiting, in my opinion, to explode when the timing is right. That's how I see it.
All about the timing, absolutely.
So stay tuned. Anything, Chester, if that doesn't answer or satisfy you, let us know, okay? And you can call us or send us in another email.
Well, but the other side of that is, hey Chester, thank you for discovering us, and I hope you'll return on occasion.
Absolutely. So go to our website, and you'll see our show schedule, and email me anytime, Chester. And you didn't tell us what grade you were in, and whether you're high school or middle school or college. So sometime when you get a chance, send us an email and tell us a little bit about your background, or call us on an open line show. What else for 2017?
Okay. What about, well, I know, again, I know we're running short on time, so I have a bunch of, I save for last some of the little tidbits that I just found interesting, and a lot of it is in the area of space science this year. I think we'd be remiss if we didn't bid a fond farewell to the Cassini Saturn probe after they had their grand finale. They got crashed into Saturn after 20 years of service. Seven of those were spent just in transit. But then they did some, they did 13 years of some really amazing science around Saturn's rings, particularly the activity of the F ring. And they got to manage, they got to look at the, how the rings manage the ripple effects of meteoroid collisions. I guess there's a little ripple. You don't see it from this far distant, even with the Hubble. But up close and personal like that, they saw some ripple effects in an entire ring that stretched for 12,000 miles or more just from a simple impact of a meteoroid from an angle. They found this incredible hexagonal feature at Saturn's North Pole. I still don't know how Saturn's weather systems create that, but I'll be fascinated to read the report. We now know that Saturn has 53 known moons. Now, when Cassini was launched, we only knew about 18 moons, and in the 7 years that it was en route, we discovered 13 more, but the rest of them were discovered in place, so another 20 or so, which is kind of amazing. We found sources of fuel and other resources going forward. If you want to get out there and explore and even have bases, you know, in the outer planets, there's plenty of different kinds of hydrocarbons and even polyethylenes and things on the surface and in the atmosphere of Titan. But there's also on Enceladus, they saw geysers popping out of it, and it turns out they got Cassini to fly through one of these geysers and do analysis. And it turns out there may be a liquid ocean of water underneath all that ice on Enceladus, anywhere from 19 to 25 miles thick of ice, and a liquid ocean underneath that. So you got a water source and you got a carbon source. I mean, you have rocket fuel, if nothing else. And you have a bunch of other things you can make with the material that you could gather just in those two places. And you're on your way to the outer solar system, which I thought was pretty amazing. And they specifically crashed Cassini at a certain angle, at a certain place, make sure it burned up thoroughly because they didn't want anything to be potentially contaminated with Earth microbes. So, which is another interesting issue that we could probably discuss another time. I'd be remiss of not mentioning that the Voyager probes just reached their 40th birthday, and they're still functioning. In fact, one of the backup thrusters was on Voyager 1 was just turned on and to test them, and they hadn't been tested since 1980. So they still worked. And at least one of those probes, depending on who you talk to, has officially reached the edge of interstellar space. So that's just amazing to me that, you know, you and I live to see this, that we actually have something in interstellar space. We had a huge solar eclipse that just fascinated everybody. It went all the way across the North American continent, from Oregon down through South Carolina, I believe it was. That was a pretty amazing event. There's going to be another one in 7 years, apparently. That kind of goes the other way, from Mexico to Maine. There was a star system called TRAPPIST-1, around which not one, but seven Earth-sized planets were discovered. This is called an ultra-cool dwarf star. There are seven Earth-sized planets circling it, and three of them could potentially be in the habitable zone. But of course, the concern is if none of those planets have moons themselves, then they will probably all be tidally locked, so we're not really sure what the prospects are for life on worlds like that, even with liquid water. But closer to home, there was the presence of liquid water and organic molecules discovered on the large super asteroid Ceres. So it's everywhere. The potential for life and the spreading of life is just everywhere in the solar system, in the universe. It's amazing to me. There was another exoplanet where they actually detected a thick atmosphere. And it was an Earth-sized planet, probably like 1.5 times the size of the Earth. They had a very thick atmosphere. So it's probably more like Venus than Earth, really. But they found a thick atmosphere. And one interesting thing that went completely unnoticed, I think, this year, astronaut Peggy Whitson set a total career space record to 665 days. And just blew away the previous record, which is low 500s. That's not all in one shot. I mean, the total astronaut career record of days in space, which is also a pretty significant feat.
Absolutely. And you're right, totally unnoticed as well.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah. I don't know what we've got going forward on probes. There's always something being built. I mean, we're still waiting on the new space telescope. We've been waiting for a long time.
Well, Dawn, let's talk about Dawn, and I've got another program coming up, Sirius. Lots of incredible planetary science on Dawn and Sirius.
Uh-huh.
I mean, just mind-boggling, okay? And so, you know, that's really incredible. We're going to have a program on what's coming up pretty soon. So I think that's in February. So listeners are interested in that. But the planetary science field for 2017 was a gold mine, especially if we include the exoplanets like you were referencing.
Absolutely. And we'll see. And it's just going to get better. Again, if the if the new telescope ever actually gets launched after spending all those billions of dollars and many, many years developing it, I think we're going to see a whole bunch of new discoveries coming out of that. And if we find anything that looks anything like Earth, I think it's just going to just spur new development. As we've discussed before, technically the warp drive is in the laboratory, so I don't know how many decades that's going to take, but at least they have a reason to keep going.
What else would you like to bring to our attention?
Well, hey, I am pretty close to the end of my list. Again, it was a huge, huge year. And I think next year is going to be just as good, if not better. As long as we don't blow each other up or something, you know, we're going to be fine.
No, I agree. I think we're poised to have even a better year in 2018 for commercial space. And I'm looking forward to it. One thing on my list that I think was very different about 2017 that was from previous years, and I really hope, Tom, it continues, and this has been a big interest of Space Show listeners, and that is the interest about legitimate, realistic interstellar flight and activities. And I think it's been a real plus for getting on the roadmap with things like Breakthrough and with other technologies.
Yeah.
And I really notice a difference in 2017 that this year it just seemed to leap into much more of a real discussion than just science fiction movies.
Well, even just throwing lots of stuff at the problem, I thought was an interesting way to go. You're taking all these, I guess you're using a big laser or something like that, but you're pushing all these little nanosats on little sails, and you're doing 1,000 of them at once and hope that maybe a dozen or so actually make it somewhere.
I know, and that's maybe 50 years away based on technology for making the big laser and getting the power for it. But we're having now serious economic and technical discussions about interstellar activities, and I think that's terrific.
Yeah.
And I think 2017 was sort of a kickoff year for that to really come into focus, and I hope it continues.
So. I hope so, too. My concern is, as always, as we expand out, if we expand out, to get more philosophical about it, what kind of people are we going to be when we go out and settle space? I mean, I can raise that question. That's a topic for a whole other show as well.
Well, yeah.
I'm of the feeling that in order to truly get out there and expand and have millions of people living in space, we're going to still have to evolve a little bit. Not physically, really, although that will happen with the, you know, with nanotechnology, but ourselves and how we relate to each other and how we do things in a public way. Right now, we're working on the same systems that we've been working on for 8,000 years, and they're generally systems that are based at their core on violence. And those systems are going to be reaching their logical conclusion probably sooner than later, and they're just not going to be sustainable. And I think we need to have better ways to relate to each other other than coercive type systems. And this may be one of the explanations potentially for the Fermi paradox. Again, another story for another time, but this has been something that's been concerning me for a long, long time, and I've been making a few doodles, and it may turn up into something written someday. So I thought I'd throw that out there.
This reminds me of one that I wanted to throw out, because I noticed that this reached a level of realism and plausibility in 2017, which I hope will continue, and that is the plausibility of human genetic editing and engineering for solving space problems. And we did a lot of programming on CRISPR and genetic engineering and guys that are working on this. NASA has the iTech program where they have helped programs and companies that, again, space scalable. That is, what are you doing terrestrially with gene editing that can impact NASA as it goes out into space in the future? And we have been doing programming with some of the iTech people that have gotten wins from NASA on that space scalable, everybody. That's exactly what it is. And I think we're going to see more and more legitimate discussion and ethical discussion about genetic engineering, gene editing, mitigating for microgravity, mitigating for radiation, and other things like that. And I hope those discussions continue at a very high level.
Well, yes, absolutely. I don't know how CRISPR will fly, you know, going to Mars, but I didn't happen to listen to those programs. I should go back in the archives and check that out. But yeah, biotech is going to be a huge factor going to the planets because they can't afford to carry a fully staffed hospital with them, with a series of clinics and laboratories, when they go and do a Mars settlement or a lunar settlement or a settlement in a habitat you build out of asteroidal materials or whatever. You're not going to be able to do that. You're going to need that nano and microbiology all the way. You're going to need lab and a chip. You're going to need all sorts of different kinds of diagnostics, like that guy who developed the thing that you just breathe into and it gives you 12 different things. Tells you what's wrong with you or what's right.
Right.
That's what's going to happen. That's what's going to fly out there, and that's what's going to have to be built and maintained, and everyone's going to know how to operate those things and even repair them. So you're going to have a very, very highly capable and intelligent group of space settlers, because nobody can be wasted. I mean, everything you do out there has to have a purpose. You know, people won't be going out there just for the sake of going out there. You'll have to have a certain amount of skills. So when I jokingly say, hey, maybe when Elon finally goes to Mars, I'll be 70-something, maybe he'll have room for a village elder. I'm just saying that very, very tongue-in-cheek, because every person has to have extreme value and be able to know, be highly versed at even a PhD level in multiple things in order to simply keep the engines running.
Yeah, cross-discipline train, for sure.
Yeah, a lot of it, yeah.
Tom, we're about at the two-hour point, so let me again thank you for coming back for 2017. And
absolutely.
A very happy new year to you and Bev and your daughter.
And to you, yes.
And we will talk again and do some more programming in 2018.
I hope so. there's going to be a lot going on. I know in my world there's going to be a whole lot going on. I'm going to have a whole lot to talk about, and so I'd love to talk about that with you.
Absolutely. And those of you who emailed Tom questions, thank you for participating. Everybody have a great New Year's, and keep it safe. Remember, people are already tying it on at office parties and things like that. So be a defensive driver for them as well as for you and your family, so that you can come back and donate to the Space Show in 2018. How about that?
Okay. Here you go.
And everybody, come back on Sunday for your New Year's space resolution and how you intend to implement it.
There you go. It'll be fun.
I hope it'll be fun. It'll either be a fun program or a very, very short program. One of the two. And Tom, again, many thanks for being with us, and safe holidays to you. And we look forward to seeing you and talking to you in 2018.
Okay. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Listeners, that's it for today. So goodbye from Tom. Goodbye from David. Goodbye from the Space Show. And everybody, keep looking up. Goodbye, all.